Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's April 30th, 2013. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in the East Village and the Good Beer Seal. Hey, we've got GreatBrewers.com as our sponsor. Check them out. Learn more about beer and everything you want to know about beer. GoodBrewerSeal.com, our supporters. All right. Here we are, Heritage Radio Network. It's our favorite nonprofit online radio network. You can be a member. There's a lot of special events and special deals for members all the time. And, hey, gosh, it's April, and it's almost May. And I got some special guests. I got Anna. I only know you as Anna Likes Beer. She's been on the show a few times. She's a certified Cicerone.
Hi, Jimmy.
How are you? What's your real name, Ann?
Everyone calls me that. Ann Becerra, but Ann Likes Beer is pretty common.
All right. And we've got a favorite guest, Alex Hall, who's like the Gotham imbiber, the cask guy of America. He's here.
Hi, Jimmy.
How are you? And what did you bring us?
I brought us three beers from Wandering Star. Thunderbolt IPA. The Burt Disqualified Imperial Stout, and our brand new spring summer seasonal Catcher in the Rye, a 5% rye pale ale.
All right. And we've got a new guest, Kevin Heald from Malt and Mold. It's a great cheese and beer shop in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. How are you, Kevin?
Great, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
And you know, the funny thing is I was at the Craft Brewers Conference in D.C. in March, and I met your second cousin. What's his name? John Slater?
John Slater.
So he's a beer distributor in Colorado.
Yes, sir.
All right. It's so funny how small this world of beer is, and it's so great that your name came up when we talked about New York.
Yeah, that was neat.
All right. So here we are. When I raise our glasses, we've got this this little... So the beer you brought, Alex, is what? It's what are we drinking right now?
This one here is the Wandering Star Thunderbolt, 6% IPA, East Coast IPA, I should add. So... don't expect your palate to be blown off by 150 IBUs of hops, because we don't do that. It's a nicely balanced India Pale Ale. The IBUs are up there, just about the right level, without going off the scale. And this is a freshly filled growler, which I filled about an hour ago at DBA Brooklyn, straight from the beer engine. So this is actually a cask growler.
All right, so in this show, we're going to try to cover growlers and cheese and beer pairings, because that's your specialty, and Kevin from Malt and Molds as well. So, Kevin, tell us a little bit about your shop, Malt and Mold, and what you're doing there with growlers and cheese and all that stuff.
Great. We have eight lines on draft for growlers. I've got your normal 64 and 32-ounce growler, but I also have 16-ounce growlers, which a few people are doing, but not too many. And we're switching up kegs every time they kick, so we've got brand new stuff, you know, as soon as we can get it in.
So what's the, you know, Alex too, and Ian, you know, what's the philosophy behind doing growlers? I don't really do growlers, and the beer tastes great right now to me. What are some of, there must be some secrets or some techniques that make a something you put in a growler better than other places. You know, you sell a lot of beer in growlers. What are your secrets, Kevin?
Try and get the foam to go all the way out, and I cap right on top of it. Then as it recedes, all you've got is CO2 in there. Air is what kills the carbonation. So as long as you keep that thing sealed, it'll last. I've got one that went 3 weeks, only because I forgot about it on my fire escape after a party. Turned out just fine. But wow. I tell people up 4 to 7 days.
Wow. What was the style?
That was a brown ale. Just a plain, basic brown ale.
Wow.
And it's, well, that's great. And then in terms of beer and cheese pairing, so what cheese would you pair with this cask IPA from Wandering Star?
I've brought it's called a Big John's Cajun Rub, and it's from the Beehive Cheese Company out in Utah. It's made by Mormons. They rub it with this crazy New Orleans-style Cajun rub.
Let's taste it. Come on.
Let's taste it.
Yeah. So what do you look for? I know you had a primer out there of what you look for when you do beer and food, beer and cheese pairings. I read something that said big flavors go well together. So you have aged Gouda and Imperial Stout. Delicate cheeses go well with Doppelbock or Porter. I mean, is that you just have this one philosophy and you follow it, or you have a lot of you make these choices every day?
Actually, no. Yes, I do like big flavors, so I'm always going for some sort of contrast. Whereas other people might like more of complementing flavors. I don't know, for whatever reason, I want to get as big a flavor, combine them together, and just see what happens.
This is a spicy cheese.
It is spicy. It's delicious, though. You make this in-house?
Oh, no, no, no. This is made out in Utah by Mormons. I love repeating that fact.
I was listening
Mormons
to that,
in Utah. They also make a coffee cheese. They rub the rind with espresso beans, which is interesting. If you know Mormons, they don't drink coffee.
Drink coffee, right.
So let's try another cheese, too. This is a beer cheese. I saw this at Smorgasburg a couple weeks ago in Williamsburg.
Yeah, this is brand new to the market. As far as I can tell, it's called Floyd Beer Cheese. It's by the guys who own Bell House and the bar called Floyd. The one I brought is their spicy jalapeno.
I've noticed a lot of breweries are making a lot more spicy beers, jalapeno beers, habanero beers, chipotle beers. Ballast Point's been doing a lot of those. It's kind of interesting. Probably be really good with this.
Yeah, so you really do like these big flavors, Kevin. So this is something if I went to your shop in the Lower East Side, I could sample some cheese and you do sampling.
Oh yeah, we do sampling. You know, we're not allowed to sample out the beer. I want to be very clear on that. But we sample cheese, we sample salamis, crackers, breads. If you come and hit me at the right moment, I'll open up anything that's on my shelves and let you have a taste of it.
All right. Well, I've run into you a lot. I know you hang out at Standings and some other good Bristol beer bars. You've been at Jimmy's number 43. So it's great to have you on the show. We're gonna. This is our first segment. We'll be here for 45 minutes. And now, Alex, we got to grill you because you're our guy. You're the cask guy.
The so cask beer mafia.
Give us a pointer. So you've got cask on tap. But you're okay with putting cask ale in growlers?
I'm totally okay with that. It's done all the time in the UK. However, you must take care of it, and you can't store it for any length of time. Best drunk the same day. Don't chill it down too much because you'll go flat, and you won't appreciate the nuances of the cask at cellar temperature. You've got to drink it at cellar temperature, basically, for the best effect. So fill up your growler and drink it the same night, or keep it as close to cellar temperature as possible. For instance, like fill a sink with cold water, put it in there, not the fridge, because it'll probably be too cold in the fridge if you must keep it the next day. So it's there to be drunk fresh, basically. That's what it's there for.
So cask ale is really it's a different thing than most of us drink. Now, a few times you've come to Jimmy's number 43, and you haven't been completely happy with how I've served it. So what pointers would you give me to ways to better serve my cask ales? Because we only do it special occasions.
You've got to blow through it quickly. If you haven't got any sort of protection, as in a cask breather, which is a device which puts CO2 into the headspace to stave off oxygen in the air, which stables the beer. CO2 is inert. It won't stable the beer. So if you're just doing something on gravity, that's exposed to oxygen. And you also need to address the temperature. Drape wet towels over the cask, not just one sitting on top as a token gesture like some people do and think that's going to like solve everything. No, you've got to drape it as much as possible and make sure those towels are always damp. If you feel them drying out, take them off immediately, soak them in cold water and put them back.
All right. Do you guys have a cask program at Ginger Mania?
We do, actually. We have two rotating casks at all times, and then we're bringing back the Gravity Cask Wednesdays. So we just tap a different one every Wednesday, kind of last 2 to 3 days. We're lucky enough to have the volume that we can go through them pretty quickly. I haven't been scolded by Alex yet, so I think we're doing a pretty good job. He's like a ninja when it comes to that.
I feel like about 5 years ago, it was like if you had to have cask, and everybody wanted to try it, and I feel like it went out of control. I feel like especially American brewers were just putting anything in. They were putting in an IPA or a double IPA. One time we had a thing where it was Otter Creek had an Imperial IPA on draft, and they wanted to have it in cask at the same time. And I just felt like they weren't really representing what the traditional English style was.
Well, I actually don't mind that. I think that it's really interesting that people are taking sort of their own take on cask beer, as long as it's served, you know, correctly, unpasteurized, it's unfiltered, it's not forced carbonated. I think it's interesting to see, you know, really fresh double IPA on cask is outstanding, but...
Yeah, I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. So many people think it should be some low-gravity bitter or mild, and nothing else is suitable. No, I disagree. Like, if you think about it, IPA was invented in the 1800s in England, and that was a strong hoppy beer. It would have been cask because kegs weren't invented back then. So it's only like the recent few decades since the First and Second World War, especially, which changed things, with beer coming down to the average of 4 to 5% what it is nowadays. Think outside of those guidelines, because it's just restrictive, and it's something that I don't believe in. Some styles will come out better on keg, but most will come out better on cask if they're done correctly.
Okay, but do you want to weigh in on? Do you do cask ales?
I got lucky when I first opened. I got a Bronx Pale Ale in a cask, and I was able to fill growlers. And I told my customers, "You got to take this home. You got to drink it right away."
Was it gravity cask, or do you have a setup for that?
No, it's just gravity. I was not set up at all. Nice. It was pretty on the fly, as a matter of fact, and very exciting. But it went really well, and my customers loved it. But they paid attention to what I told them.
So, Alex, if you could redesign things, I know you've been part of the Wandering Star Brewery up in Massachusetts, and it's an English style brewery. But if you
we do other styles as well.
Yeah, you do.
Zingari Wit is a Belgian. We've done a German Bock. We're drinking an American IPA right now. So it's I'm English. Chris Post, the brewer, is English, but we don't just do English beers.
You know what, though? I think people tend to just automatically, if it's not in your face and extreme and big, so, oh, well, it's English. You know, if it's an IPA that's not, like, piercing your taste buds, it's, well, it's English style. It's kind of a quick go-to.
It's true. You know what's piercing my taste buds? The
not
cheese
that it's correct,
Kevin, but, brought us two spicy cheeses.
I'm a spicy kind of guy.
You like that. But now I'm trying to get to somewhere with you, Alex, because we've talked a lot about casks and stuff. If you were going to design just a brewery to just make casks, like, let's start in the beginning. This is 200 years ago.
Well, it doesn't really need any design differences. It's all the same brew. You just got to treat it differently after it's fermented, basically. You've got to stop the fermentation just before the end, so there's some yeast still active in there. And rack it off, keep it warm, put some sort of priming in the cask. So it's just a different technique. When kegging, basically, it doesn't need any differences in design in the brewery, and that shows, because most breweries around here actually do cask. There's very few that haven't embraced it now.
I think the biggest way to also, to expand cask programs at breweries is to just educate customers. Is that's like, if you could have the greatest cask program at a bar or at a brewery, and if it doesn't sell in 3 to 4 days and people don't understand what they're drinking, you're losing a lot of beer. You're gonna be tossing a lot of beer down the sink. So, Education is key, in my opinion, when it comes to cask beer.
Exactly. That's why I like cask breathers. A lot of people don't know what they are, but that's a device to keep cask beer fresher longer.
And how does that work?
You attach it to a CO2 bottle and a regulator set around 4 PSI, so very, very low. And the cask breather is a demand valve, which just opens and shuts when there's a vacuum created. On the other end of the breather, you attach a hose and a spigot into where the spiral peg would go. So in that hose, when there's a vacuum, that demand valve, the cask breather itself, will open briefly and squirt a little bit of CO2 in, just a little bit, so it won't get in the beer, but it will form a blanket over the top of the beer to keep it away from the oxygen in the atmosphere.
Hmm. Well, I like the cask that you poured for us in the growler.
Cheers, thanks.
And it goes really well with a spicy cheese.
Yeah, it is. It's
all right. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
You're listening to Someone Like You by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We have a great lineup tonight. We've got Ann Likes Beer, Ann Becerra.
Becerra.
I only know you as Annie Likes Beer.
That's
Alex
okay.
Hall, Wandering Star Brewery, Cask Expert, Kevin Hill, Malt and Mold. It's a great lineup here. And we tasted some cheeses. You brought two spicy cheeses. And what's your philosophy behind that? It's you like extreme pairings. What's the deal, Kevin?
I do like extreme pairings, but I knew I was bringing some. I was going to bring some big beers as well, and I wanted something that would hold up to the beer and kind of stand on its own as well. I don't like either part of the pairing to get lost. Now, when somebody comes in and asks me for a specific style of cheese,
he's pointing a knife at me. So he's cutting cheese.
He's like, don't ask me.
If they ask for a specific style of cheese or beer that's mild, then I know which way to go on the other end, and I can go one direction or the other. But when they give me, I like an IPA, an Imperial IPA, then I got to make a choice. Do I go mild cheese and just let the beer speak, or do I go big? I always go big.
So what's the next cheese?
We have a Gouda. It's an American Gouda called Mariachi Premium. It's from the Holland Family Cheese out in Wisconsin.
All right.
I believe it just won an award in the American Cheese Championship last year.
And Alex, what's the next beer you poured for us?
This is our brand new one. It's called Catcher in the Rye, and this is our spring summer beer. We had USSR Ultimate Summer Session Rye last year. We're not doing that. We've got this one this year. It's a fairly similar recipe, but a little bit stronger. That was 4.4 last year. This one is 5%, and this one's a little bit paler. So a nice rye pale ale. I don't know whether to call it a session pale ale or not. 5% is kind of straggling the lines whether it's a session beer or not. But
let's have a little top off on that one. I like that one. And Ann, what do you think of this pairing? So let Ann have some of the cheese and so you're a certified Cicerone, Ann, right?
Yeah, this is a part of the test is the food and beer pairings. It's also a really fun part of my job. Thanks. Thank you.
So how long did you have to study to pass a certified Cicerone? Because there's not too many in New York, are there?
You know, it wasn't a lot. It's just part of the job every day. You know, you're tasting things, you're traveling, you're talking to people, you're, you know, drinking beers, and it just kind of became part of the day-to-day thing. So I was studying without realizing I was studying, and when I decided to take the test, I don't know, probably about a good 2 weeks of intense book studying, and then the rest is just on the job, sort of learn as you go. Tough gig, right?
It's good. So it's American Gouda with the Wandering Star Rye.
Oh, this is a good match, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now it brings into our, we have a guest who's called in. He's from Philly, Steve Wilde. Steve,
hey guys,
how are you?
How you doing?
Great, man.
Hi, Steve.
So tell us about what you've done. How was the Philly Beer Week?
Oh, it's coming up. We're starting Philly Beer Week. Well, first of all, I wonder how I got left out on this whole beer and cheese thing. I'm sitting in my office like a loser drinking water.
Next time you have to take the Chinatown. You know, there's a $15 Chinatown bus from Philly to New York. It takes about 2 hours.
All right, cool. Next time.
All right.
So Philly Beer Week is coming up. We got last week of May into the first week of June. It's one of the nation's biggest beer events, and we're thrilled to be involved with it at Al Spina.
All right. So how did you get started? You have a good story. You're a really interesting guy. You went to the Drexel University. And so how long have you been doing this? It's like hospitality management. You were a GM. But you've really been involved with beverages. So just tell us about your background.
Yeah, you got it. So I work for a restaurant group in Philly called the Vetri Family. I have done so for about 7 years. But I was born and raised in Northern Ireland, moved out to the States in 92, went to school for international studies, and actually took a little sojourn to do an internship with the European Parliament in Brussels, and fell in love with beer through like 2000, 2001, and came back and started working in restaurants and just trying to work my way through the restaurant world. Wound up with these guys at Vetri, and they're all Italian-focused, so I've been lucky enough to work with serious Italian wine lists and Italian cocktail programs and things like that, but beer was always one of my first loves, so we opened up this Italian beer bar about a year ago called Alla Spina. We have 20 taps. We do a big focus on local, Italian, international, about 100 bottle lists, a couple casks as well.
Oh, do you find a lot of Italian breweries are making cask beer?
Not a ton. We got a couple in. Last time we got Italian cask was probably about 9 months ago. The guys from Ballad Inn,
of course,
who are involved in Italy up in New York, with Sam Calagione and those guys. We got a strong dark from them, and I believe a chestnut ale from them.
Oh, great.
But that's the only thing we've ever seen. There's very little that comes through in the Italian-wise in cask, and actually very little that comes through in draft. We're lucky to get drips and drabs here and there, but we usually have about 5 or 6 out of the 20 taps are Italian.
All right.
How's that going? I know they're a little pricey. People are kind of responding well to that in Philly?
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. Philly has such an educated beer market. You know, anybody who drops in here knows all about beer. They're upset if we don't have Russian River on tap. You know,
we're just jealous you get Russian River.
Yeah, they want to see the geekiest, craziest things, which is amazing. It's an incredible opportunity for us to really connect with those people. But I find that, you know, no matter how intense people are about beer and, you know, how geeky they get, the Italian stuff is still really, really uncharted territory.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're lucky there as well that, you know, there are very few places, I think, that have a big focus on Italian beer.
Great.
All right, man. Hey, so tell us some of the highlights of Philly Beer Week that are coming up and what you're doing at Alaspina.
Yeah, so we got some crazy stuff planned. So we do have one Italian brewer visiting, a gentleman by the name of Jacopo Lenci of Bruton in Tuscany, who's a good friend and one of the most interesting guys in the beer world. He's a hardcore punk enthusiast.
Very cool guy.
And actually, yeah, he's amazing. And he actually ran a restaurant and punk venue in Tuscany for the longest time and started brewing beer out of that venue and eventually kind of outgrew the concert space. So he stopped hosting, you know, the Descendants and Sepultura and started just focusing on the beer thing instead. So he's hanging out with us. We're doing a late night hardcore punk happy hour.
What's Saturday, the date on that?
June 1st.
June 1st?
Sorry. June 1st, Saturday night, yeah. He'll be here hanging late night. We'll be cranking some Misfits.
I will see you there.
We're definitely coming down.
We'll have all you guys in.
Yeah.
It'll be amazing.
Philly Beer Week at Alaspina. Hey, so we're doing with beer and cheese pairings and beer and food pairings. Do you do any special programs at Alaspina?
Like, yeah, absolutely. Actually, one of our Beer Week events is we're really fortunate to have DeBruno Brothers as our local fromagier, our cheese supplier. And they have one of, I think, the most exciting selections around. And so we're doing a little event with them where they're going to pair up with beers from Yards, who's one of our favorite local brewers. That's going to be Friday, June 7th in the afternoon. But usually we try to have a beer pairing that we'll suggest one day a week. We'll do like a Thursday night beer pairing special with the cheese, and we'll get some things in locally, or we'll, you know, get just a different French cheese, Belgian cheese, whatever. And try to set it up as just like a little nightly pairing, you know, $5 for a sip of beer alongside a cheese that we really like.
Great.
And what about for Beer Week, do you have any special guests coming in, any special brewers or anything?
Yeah, we have a bunch of Christian De Benedetti, who's one of our favorite authors.
Oh, he's great.
The Great American Ale Trail is coming down to hang out, and we're doing so Philly has this big Italian-American heritage to it. I don't know if you guys know, like, South Philly and the Italian market.
You mean like the movie Rocky?
Yeah, I don't know
if
you've ever heard of a little movie named Rocky, but Christian's going to come hang out with us, and we're going to do a Sunday night, Sunday supper with a very special guest chef, Sal Vetri. So Mark Vetri is the chef owner of all four restaurants, and his dad, Sal, is about as old school South Philly Italian as you get. I think he might be like an extra in Rocky somewhere even. He's going to come do like a big red sauce dinner, lots of spaghetti, meatballs. Christian's going to be there signing books and pairing up three beers from Italian-American brewers.
Italian-American brewers?
Like, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, who are you, what breweries are you looking at?
We're going to have some from Russian River, from Vinny Gelurzo. We're going to have some from Sam Caligione, Dogfish Head. And one TBA, I think it's going to be Scott Vaccaro.
Captain Lawrence, I was just going to say.
All right.
We get our New York people in there, too. Awesome.
I'm Jimmy Carbone.
Jimmy Carbone.
I don't make beer. You don't want my beer. I'm too lazy. But, hey, okay, one last thing. Okay, we're going to make this tough on you. Okay, so right now we're pairing some beers and cheese. So give us, like, four of your favorite, like, beer and food pairings that you might offer in a dinner or at the bar in Philly.
Yeah, absolutely. So probably my favorite beer and cheese pairing I've ever had, I was turned on to it by a general manager from DeBruno Brothers 9th Street, which is an amazing story you guys should check out if you get down here. But Hunter Fike, the GM there, turned me on to Pecorino al Tartufo, truffled sheep's milk cheese from Emilia-Romagna, Italy, paired with Saison DuPont. And it was probably one of the most defining food pairings I've ever had for me, where like Kevin was saying, that kind of intense thing, I think, is when you can take the greatest risks with a pairing. And sometimes it's a total failure. You know, have two things that are really in your face, really big flavor profile. Sometimes they just fight with each other and both die off. This is one of those really rare occasions where both things are firing at all cylinders, really lit up every single flavor sensor that you have. The truffle, the spice from Saison DuPont, that slight funk. So yeah, that might be my favorite beer and cheese pairing I've ever had. We have another little restaurant called Vetri that's actually the flagship Italian restaurant of the four, and that's a tiny tasting menu-driven restaurant, about 30 seats. We do all just 7-8-course tasting menus, and we do a beer pairing down there as well. So that's one that we've had a lot of fun with, doing an amazing amount of beer pairings, actually, alongside wine pairings on any given night. And things that I really like over there, we do a barley wine alongside a whole-roasted Capretto. So we do this slow-roasted, spit-roasted goat. So it's really kind of barbecue-style, smoky, crispy, fatty, over polenta, and paired with a big, intense barley wine. And actually, there's an Italian one from an Abruzzese producer, Almond 22, that incorporates some chestnut honey and citrus peel. And that's that big, smoky, rich.
And that sounds good, doesn't it?
Oh, my gosh. I'm like drooling as you're talking to me.
You guys enjoy your beer and cheese. I'm going to talk about
exactly.
My pairings over here.
The cheese was sounding really great until you start talking about polenta.
All right. All right. Well, listen, Steve, guess what? We're just too hungry now. So hang on. I'm going to ask Kevin. So, Kevin, you jump in now. So you must have a favorite beer and cheese pairing.
No, all I'm going to say is that when we do the truffle cheese and Saison DuPont pairing, we're going to name it after you. We're going to put that up on the menu at Malt and Mold. I'm going to somehow package it together. I'm going to make my customers buy that pairing, and that's going to be it. We're just going to name it after you.
You know, it's funny. I have to tell you, sorry, Jimmy, to interrupt, but at DuPont Brewery, the brewmaster, his wife, is the cheesemonger for that whole area of Belgium. And so you go to DuPont Brewery, and he's over there with the beers, and he's this genius, brewing genius, and then his wife is in with the curds, and it's just the most perfect pairing you can imagine. I'm sure, you know, a truffle cheese gets in there once or twice because that just sounds divine.
It's funny. I thought I had a great idea until you just told me that story. And now we're shutting Malt and Mold down. We're going to go and create a brewery and cheese making.
Kevin. Okay. Do you want to have a brewery one day?
No, I actually tried to brew beer in my kitchen, you know, 20 years ago, and it was miserable. People ask me all the time. When they come in, they see the Malt and Mold growlers, and like, oh, you brew your own beer. No. I've tried to brew my own beer.
I have a feeling that Malt and Mead. You might be probably the perfect beer and cheese store that I've ever heard of, and I can't wait to come down and try it out.
You got to come down.
And Steve, thanks so much for coming on, buddy. The other thing is, you don't have an Irish accent. We were expecting an Irish accent. That's why we brought you on today. So.
You know, my wife makes fun of me all the time for that. She says I'd be a much more handsome gentleman if I had a little bit of my Northern Irish accent left. But you know what? I left it at home.
Well, here's something that's going to trump Philly Beer Week. We got Alex Hall. He's going to tell us about his new festival, or its old festival, in England. What's it called, Alex? Here's the English accent that we love.
Thanks.
What accent?
Okay. I'm a co-founder of a cast beer and music festival. We call it Glastonwick. This is going to be the 18th year this year. I co-founded it back in 96 with a friend of mine who's a professional musician and poet. So basically what we've got here is a 50-50 meld straight down in the middle, like thrust together in the same room, of a traditional music festival with like independent bands and radical poets, etc., and a campaign for real ale style beer festival, like all thrust together in the same room. And well, that is one hell of a niche basically that we created, and we founded that 18 years ago. Basically, what happened? I was working behind the bar of a brew pub called the Evening Star in Brighton, England. Now the brewery tap for Dark Star, but back then it was just a little brewery in the cellar. And it was like a slow afternoon, and my friend Attila the stockbroker walked in gagging for a beer after just coming off a tour in multiple venues where all there was to drink was crappy, mass-produced, fizzy, gnat's piss, as he put it.
Is stockbroker a nickname for something, or is he? how many stockbrokers go on tour?
Now that's another story. When he was,
but hold on,
that's okay. No, that's I was just checking.
If there's time, I'll tell you later.
All good.
Alex, so, Steve, that's a hint of a real English accent there. But hold on, 1 second. We're taking a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
You're listening to DD by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're out here at Roberta's in Bushwick in Brooklyn, New York, having a great time with Ann Likes Beer, Alex Hall, Kevin Heald, and Kevin, what did you just taste this on? We've got barrier beer here. Which one is this?
This is the Beach Street Wheat. It's a Belgian-style wheat beer.
And what did you pair that with?
It's not really a pairing. I think it's working.
But, I think it's working, too.
Thought I'd serve it up. This is Charlito's Cucina Salami, and this is their Trufa Secca. So there's little hints of truffle mushroom in that.
And where is this from?
Yeah, he's out of Long Island City, so he's a local guy, and he was producing locally until he got too big, and now for USDA purposes, he's in St. Louis, but I believe he's working on bringing it back home. He's committed to this territory. So
on the air, I've tried to talk while I eat pizza. It doesn't work. Earlier this whole show, I was eating cheese, and it worked. Can't eat the salami and talk at the same time. But, Anne, you've been to a lot of places.
Hazard.
Yeah, right? You've been to a lot of places. You're hanging out at Saison DuPont. And you know all these people. Tell us a few of the other breweries that you've been to, because you're really an insider in the beer world.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think for me, it's obviously I love beer and the flavors and everything is great about it. But I think, you know, something about the connection to where it comes from is really important for me. The culture of a place, you know, going to a place like Saison DuPont, which is a generational, you know, brewmaster. And it's been there forever. And I'm touring it. I'm walking around and I see the copper tins the big, where they would hide from the Nazis when they were collecting all the copper and how they used to fire up the... It's something about it. When I drink a Saison DuPont, perfect example, it's like I feel like I'm transported to Belgium. I just got back from Colorado. We went to hang out with the guys at Oscar Blues and Avery and Left Hand and, you know, to be there in the day and walk around and go to Rocky Mountain National Park and be in the mountains and then go have a great fresh day. It really kind of brings it all home and you see where it comes from, and I just think that's a really cool element to craft beer culture.
So you're an industry professional.
Mm-hmm.
You work at the Ginger Man. You're a certified Cicerone.
Mm-hmm.
You're a recognized expert in all things craft beer.
Kind
of.
Okay.
When you go to these places, do they fly you out? Do you get paid?
No. This is something when I, you know, decided to turn my hobby into my job. So, you know, I'm out there. Yes, great. Granted, everyone's so cool. I mean, they would be cool to anyone. I think that's one of the things that drew me to this industry is if I send a customer to, I'm going to, California. Oh, go say hi to Lagunitas. They're great. They will treat them like family the same way they treat me that way. You know, I just think it's a really cool industry, and I love to go visit and see where these beers come from and see the backstory behind it. I think it's a great industry, not only for industry and American industry, but a lot of the green efforts and the charitable efforts. I just think from a business point of view as well, I think it's a really cool something to emulate, and I think, you know, they're setting a good example for American business.
And so you know Alex Hall, right?
Oh, from yeah. Before.
So what do you think about Alex Hall? I mean, he's the cask pioneer.
You call him pioneer. I call him a mafia, a craft beer, a cask beer mafia. I think he's awesome. I think it's really great. I think, you know, a lot of times, especially now, you have these big companies masquerading as craft, and everyone's jumping on the bandwagon. Everyone's trying to kind of get a piece. And I think to have someone who's so genuinely passionate about, you know, traditional styles and something like cask beer is great. You know, when he shows up and he always, what do you have in cask? First question. You know, what's going cask? Okay, here, you know, I'm like excited to give to him. Like, taste it; it's fresh. You're gonna love it. Like, I know that he's not gonna, you know, that he's gonna enjoy it. And I think it's really cool. I think it's nice to have people check other people once in a while, so we don't get too crazy. Or, you know, I think it's awesome. I do make a joke, like, you know, you handle your cask wrong, he's gonna jump out of a potted plant somewhere and yell at you. But I think it's, it's good for the industry. Personally, I think it's awesome.
Right, you know, and you were talking about your festival in Glastonbury.
Yes.
There's nothing like that in America. There's not really a true cask ale festival here.
I introduced basically myself the concept of a small cask festival in a bar 10 years ago at the Brazen Head in Brooklyn. Now I do them at DBA Brooklyn in Williamsburg. Brazen Head needed the space at the back rather than have it have a fridge there that's only going to be used three times a year. So it quite kind of like didn't work out there ultimately. But now I'm doing them at probably twice a year. Well, only once because of Sandy in the last year, but in theory, twice a year. November.
What a bitch.
Cheers. Probably November, the next one, and then probably for next year's Craft Beer Week. So that's DBA Brooklyn, 113 North 7th in Williamsburg.
And what about the one in England?
Glastonbury. Yeah, sorry, Alex. I ran out of time in the last segment. That's going to get...
Can you say the name of that festival again?
Glastonwick.
I love that.
Glastonwick.
Yes. Oh. So it's a play on the Glastonbury Music Festival. We founded it in a suburb of Brighton called Southwick. So Glastonbury and Southwick, shortened to Glastonwick. So it stuck. But now we move. We're now on a farm in the countryside. And we've got much more space, so 86 casks through the weekend.
Wow.
And this is the same weekend that this other event we discussed earlier, 31st of May through 2nd of June.
Do you guys go through all those?
Oh, yes, absolutely, yeah.
And there you go. It goes back to the education, because in, you know,
yeah, we have spares. We have spares lined up under the stillage, so we'll put them up the day before if we think we're going to need them. That's one big cask fest, coupled with one heck of an independent music festival, all thrust together in the same room.
So when you were doing at Brazen Head, how many casks did you have then?
We were very limited with space, so we had to rotate. So it was 11 at any one time.
Right, okay.
And some of them had to be
total?
Because
I remember getting there at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, this was in the early days, were all gone.
It varied from around 18 to around 30, depending on how well advertised it was. Sometimes people like Time Out would pick up on it. Sometimes they wouldn't. So we just didn't know how many people would get to see that it was happening.
Great. And then, so, Anne, you were saying that he said he went through 86 casks in Glastonwick.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, what did you say, the American Beer Fest?
Well, no, I just think that, you know, I think we're getting there little by little. I know that there's some people that are really, you know, Patrick does a good cask fest. You know, it's coming yearly. And
exactly, yes.
It's starting to, you know, people are starting to kind of get it a little more. But it's still at the end of the night, there tends to be, okay, well, we have all this cask, we're not going to be able to use it. So you either give it to a bar for the next day and hopefully it runs out or, you know. But that's cool. Let me ask you, don't lie. Do you ever just sneak in a super highly carbonated cold American IPA in your backpack?
Absolutely not.
Get out of here.
Abs- absolutely not. No,
just,
no,
just
no.
Just to cleanse the palate.
Well, that's it. What beers do you like, Ian?
Well, I mean, I
know you like everything. But.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things I like the most about beer is there's a time and a place for everything, and it kind of can hit any mood or strike any fancy, you know, at any given time. But I love cask beers. I think a fresh cask beer is nothing better. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I'll go to cask festivals, and I think it's fantastic. But by hour two, I'm like, all right, just give me a little bit of something carbonated just to keep it going. But, you know, I get, obviously, I think I'm,
no, these
I'm
are,
not as the traditionalist as...
No, these are naturally carbonated. So anything that's flat will get taken off and sent back.
No, I don't mean it like that. I just, you're drinking for quite a long stretch of time, and every once in a while it's like, oh, I'll just have one off the draft.
Okay.
And then I'll go back to the cask, you know?
jump on a plane, come to Glastonbury, and I think you'll be impressed. There you go.
How about I sneak in your backpack? Put me in your luggage. I'm there.
Well, what I meant to say is, Ann, you know, everybody wants you to be at all their festivals, so we should do a Kickstarter or something so you could go to all these festivals.
There you go.
Wouldn't that be fun?
You want to get on that, Jimmy?
See, now I just got her attention. So all
there
right.
There you go.
Okay, Alex, Glastonbury. I still don't know about Glastonbury, England.
Well,
you have 86 casts. Just name some of the breweries that provide casts for this festival.
Well, we're sponsored by Dark Star, who I used to work for. Which was the fledgling brewery in the Evening Star when it was founded. Now it's on a 45-barrel plant about 15 miles away. It's not in Glastonbury. It's just outside of Brighton. It's just the name that's a play on Glastonbury, to just bear that in mind. So 86 casks. Yeah, I can
so
do
besides
that.
What are the other breweries besides Dark Star? Name two.
Most definitely Williams Brothers. My friend Bruce Williams always comes up with some interesting stuff up in Scotland. Bartram's, which is a small brewery in East Anglia. They come up with some wacky stuff and a lot of one-offs, and totally share the same politics as me and Attila.
Do any American breweries send out casks to you guys?
I had Brooklyn Brewery last year, but I'm not going to get any American stuff this year because my casks have only just come back from last year.
Gotcha.
It takes a year for the empties to come back. Well, it shouldn't do, but that was my planning just went wrong. That's another story.
How do you think a big, like crazy, you know, Imperial IPA or something from the States would do at that festival?
It did very well. I had Brooklyn Blast last year.
Oh, the Blast?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay.
It was about £9 a pint, but which is very expensive. It's like three times as what a normal pint goes for. But it all went in the end. Yes, it went down very well.
Is that how you do the fest? You actually sell it by pint?
Yeah.
You don't sell tasting cards or anything?
No, like it's that? It's totally different to the concept of the generic American festival where you pay a lot of money up front to get in, and then you drink for free for however long. Here there's a nominal entrance fee which pays for the bands and the shuttle bus, because this place is in the middle of nowhere. I have to hire a shuttle bus to go back and forth all weekend, so the entrance pays for the bands and that, and everything else is pub prices. So it's basically just one big pop-up pub stroke festival all thrust into the same room for the weekend.
Cool.
Glastonbury. We should go there next year.
I think you should.
Yeah.
So it's 31st of May to 2nd of June this year, if anybody wants to jump on a plane.
I'll be in Philly at the punk rock show.
Oh, yeah, and Philly Beer Week's coming up too. That's right. So, Ann, any favorite beer and cheese or beer and food pairings that you have on the top of your head?
Off the top of my head.
From your Cicerone test.
Which was like 3 years ago.
Was that the hardest test you ever took?
No,
it wasn't hard for you.
I mean, no, it wasn't that it wasn't hard. I think that it's you know, if you're in it every single day and that's kind of what your job is and that's what your day to day is, it's kind of fun.
Do you think that more people in the beer industry should be taking the Cicerone?
I don't know that it's like, you know, the end result is why you did it. I mean, for me, it was things like draft systems and processes and, you know, things that I don't do on a day to day basis that I wanted to kind of get more of a handle on, and this gave me a definite date to, you know, study up on those things. I think the amount that I studied gave me so much more. I mean, not that I think the test is wonderful, but I think I really went to town on studying and gained a lot from just that process alone. Very
awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
And Kevin, anything else you want to say about the malt and mold?
We're having our one-year anniversary this Saturday, May 4th.
Congrats.
From 3 to 6. Thank you. We're having a bluegrass band, Goose Island Tasting. I've got the...
Inside the store.
Inside the store, we have the beer tasting. Everything else is happening outside. We're talking about a 300-square-foot space. But I have the Bourbon County Stout in-house right now for that tasting. And then we're doing blowout.
And earlier, you were on the phone making beer orders. I mean, how many times a week do you order beer?
Pretty much every day. You know, I've got a lot of different people coming in specifically to get a beer order from me. So I've got to manage them. I've got a very tiny cooler.
I'm going to Malt and Mold tomorrow. I'm going to hang out with you. I'm going to try some cheeses and buy some beer.
Oh, yeah.
And we have a special guest who's been sitting through this whole thing. From our sponsor, greatbrewers.com, we got a woman from Union Beer, the local distributor. Michelle, tell us your full name because I don't even know your last name.
Michelle Arizoza.
Hey.
And she's a buddy of all of us, and thanks for coming on the show. All right. A couple of things going on. Coming to New York, it's a big deal. It's the Savoir Craft Beer Festival. It's going to be in New York for the first time.
That's going
to
be awesome.
I would say, guys, check it out. Go to our site, goodbrasil.com. You can buy tickets. It's definitely worthwhile, and it's going to be in New York for the first time. And in closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com. We've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. All right. And thanks to everybody, including who's here. I don't know. We had Steve. We got Ann, Alex, Kevin, and Michelle. And thanks for joining me here. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, our engineer, Joe Galarraga.
Thanks
for
to
listening.
You.
All
Cheers,
right.
Jimmy.
And we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.